Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. Later on in the show, Gab Marcotti and Julian Laurent here to reflect on Barca's clash with Sevilla today. We start, though, in the Premier League. Tottenham Hotspur taking on at Manchester United. It finished Spurs 1, United 1. Craig Burley, Stevie Nicol and Frank Leboeuf here to reflect on that game. Craig, let's start with you. 1-1 fair?
Well, I think United did deserve something out of the game the way they played. No surprise that Tottenham were playing deep. That's what he did before the lockdown. That's what he'll continue to do. But I thought, you know, during the parts of the first half, they shifted the ball quite well, Spurs, and particularly the switchy play down that right-hand side where I thought, you know, for them, they were trying to exploit Maguire and Shaw, who didn't look comfortable for long periods. But you know, ultimately, you know, Tottenham got that goal, which was a really poor one from United's perspective, and Maguire and De Gea didn't cover themselves in glory in that. But he made some changes, didn't he? And he brought, you know, Greenwood made a difference, Pogba made a difference, and Tottenham just started to sat deep. So I think United were at least good for a point.
Pogba, of course, brought on during the second half, Frank, and put in a performance that you want to see more of as a United fan.
Yes, definitely. He made a huge impact when he came on and played for like 30 minutes. And we saw with Bruno Fernandes that he was they could make a very good pair. And I want to see more, of course, more involvement. But he created the penalty, even if maybe we're going to talk about it. I don't think it was a penalty. But he was good. We had a good mentality. And we know how good he is and how big he can be for Manchester United.
He's got to start now, from now on, isn't he, Stevie?
No, I don't think so. He didn't look particularly strong. I mean, you saw him close up a couple of times and he was blowing pretty heavy for a guy who only was playing for half an hour. So clearly he didn't start because he's not physically strong enough to certainly play a whole game. And so Solskjaer decided to bring him on for a half hour, which is actually better for him. It makes him look good. Clearly the opposition were running out of steam. And when you can bring on somebody with his ability, then that's good for everybody. It makes him look good. And of course it gives the team a lift. I'd have to see on the other hand though, Tottenham. If Mourinho's going to play this way all the time, which it certainly looks like, he's going to have to find a playmaker. Because he doesn't have one. Eric Lamela, as much as he had the ball, he can't pick a pass. I don't know whether he sees a pass, but even if he does, he can't pick it, and he kept giving it away. And Harry Kane must be thinking, oh my goodness, whether he's 100% sharp fit physically or not, he must be thinking, wow, are we actually going to do this game in, game out? Because if they do, he's going to have a tough old time getting some goals.
Craig, just a final word on Pogba. Do you agree with Stevie that he isn't necessarily a shoo-in in the starting 11 for the next game? I thought he had some good touches when he came on, won the penalty, obviously.
Yeah, there was a great half volley over the top for Rashford, I think it was, as well. It was a fantastic ball. Not that we should be surprised by that. Look, I get what Stevie's saying, but here's the problem. The only way he's going to get up to speed is by playing games, and the games are going to be running out very, very quickly because of the period they're going to have to be played in. So, yeah, he's probably not going to play in the majority, particularly not like two or three in a row for all the reasons that Stevie mentioned. But I think he's going to have to try and get him in at some point. If we really want to talk about a player who's unfit and I think looked worse, was Harry Kane. Now, I do agree. I think, you know, Stevie's absolutely right. And we said this before the lockdown. If Tottenham want to get Harry Kane out, then they're just going to keep playing the way they're playing because he's going to get fed up. But he also doesn't look anywhere near fit. Now, we know we had that big long layoff prior to this pandemic and all the talk about would he lead the line for England and so forth. He just looks a million miles off being fully fit. And that's going to make the problem even worse because when you're up there on your own and when your team are playing so deep, then generally it's a long ball over the top that's going to get you out. And he's just not fit enough to get onto those long balls at the moment. So a couple of key players for both sides, really, a couple of their talisman not quite up to speed, but I thought Pogba looked very, very good, obviously, when he came on.
Stevie, after the game, Mourinho said no penalty for either of them. Do you agree with him?
I agree with the second one that VAR overturned. The first one is 100% a penalty kick. You know, Eric Dier gets done one-on-one with Pogba. He ends up on the wrong side of him. initially he puts his arms, tries to put his arms across Pogba and lean into him, and then gets his legs tangled up with Pogba, and down goes Pogba. As a defender, when you get on the wrong side, it's your responsibility not to get tangled up with your opponent, particularly in the penalty box. And so, I don't know what Mourinho's crying about. He just seems to cry for the sake of it these days. It is 100% a penalty. And if you saw Eric Dier's face when the ref gave it, that told you all you needed to know.
100% a penalty, Frank?
No, for me, there isn't a penalty. For that reason, we all consider
what?
Let me finish. If you consider that if Pogba put his left leg towards Dier's leg and falls, there is a foul from Dier. When, by experience, Pogba, because he's a very good player and he knows football, that as soon as he will touch Dier's leg, the referee is going to give the penalty. Dier tries to grab Pogba and doesn't get it, but Pogba puts his left leg on Dier's legs. So, there is no foul from Dier. And because it's an habit,
because we are
used to that, we say it's a penalty.
Well,
but it's not. When
Dier
makes a foul...
I disagree with the old legs one. But you just said that Dier grabs him. So, just forget the legs.
I said... It's not true. I said Dier tried to grab him and couldn't get him. So... There is no foul if he doesn't get it.
And that's why they get tangled up.
What is Dier's foul? Where is it?
There's a lot of legs in this discussion, Frank, but there's not much. I don't think there's much legs to your argument here, I have to say.
that's a fine word, but that's fine. But really check out, and I know Manchester United fans are going to get crazy after me, but just check Pogba's left leg. He looks for Dier's legs. And as soon as he touches his leg, he must have eyes in the back of his head then.
On the other side of the equation, it's every player's prerogative when they get round the defender, as you know, that he will try and get ahead and get in front of that defender, particularly in the box. And then it's up to the defender to try and get out the way. If the contact is unintentional, it matters not a jot. Pogba, I thought, did a great job of getting round him and then get in front of him. And not only was there a slight tug, which you could argue was it enough or not, but there was definite contact in the legs. And by this point, Frank, in my opinion, and I think Steve's, Pogba was ahead of him. And therefore, even if VAR looked at it wasn't clear and obvious, and it would never have been overturned. But I think it was a penalty quite clearly in the end.
And understand what you say, Craig. If you consider that Pogba is really in front of Dier, which wasn't the case. He was a little bit in front, but on the side. And then, because he's too far, he pushes his leg on the left to go to Dyer's legs. And then, I think it's for Pogba the way to get a penalty, because he knows that the referee doesn't know anything about football and we won't see the trick. That's the only thing for me. So of course I'm going to defend the defenders, but in that case, I don't get it. I think it's a kind of a habit from us to see those penalty and say, well, that's a clear penalty because we saw that 100 times.
Do you know, Dan, which is another interesting one, and you mentioned will Pogba start to Stevie? You know, I do think he's, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is starting to have a huge dilemma about his goalkeeper. Because before this lockdown, he was a liability. If you remember the game at Everton, just to name but one game where he cost him and was just crazy, but he's making mistake after mistake after mistake. It's a bit like David De Gea. When he first came to Man United, I remember talking to Eric Steele, the goalkeeping coach, who was working with him, and he was at Derby with me, and he says, Craig, he's going to be a great goalkeeper. And he was right, and he did turn into be one of the best and be Spain's best, but he's been dethroned by Spain. And there might come a point, if this continues, he's going to be dethroned by United. They've got Romero in the wings, they've got young Henderson in the wings, who's very highly thought of. But he can't keep making mistake after mistake, because it could cost him getting in the top four. So that's a big dilemma for the manager at some point, potentially.
Just De Gea to blame on that goal, Stevie?
No, ultimately, you know, Bergwijn's got through, so defensively there's been mistakes made. Of course, Maguire gets caught. If there's one thing Maguire can't do, it's turn particularly quickly. And so he got caught out, but no question. It's a shot that you expect the goalkeeper to save. And listen, don't get me wrong, I'm not a goalie coach, but how can you try and punch a ball? You're basically making your hands smaller to do that, rather than opening your palm up. If he opens his palm up, then he parries that away. So it's horrible goalkeeping. Yes, defensively it's a mistake. Harry Maguire gets caught. So all round, horrible for Manchester United.
Frank?
Yeah. For the first time today, I'm going to agree with my colleagues. They're completely right. Maguire he makes a mistake because he's slow, and you can't be fantastic everywhere, because I think he's a very good player, but that's really his weakness, and we saw it today. But it's true, like, De Gea must do better. He has to save that goal. He made a fantastic save like 5 minutes after, I think, on Son, but that one, no, that's not possible. Even Xhaka couldn't say anything about that.
Yeah, today. Xhaka could save that today.
Thanks, boys. What that means, while Spurs remain in eighth, United fifth, 2 points adrift of Chelsea in fourth, Wolves have the chance to move level on points with Manchester United tomorrow. They're away against West Ham. That's one of four matches that are taking place in England. You've got Watford against Leicester, Brighton against Arsenal, and the late game sees Bournemouth taking Crystal Palace.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride, from the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers, always there for you, rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with Geico on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Meanwhile, in Spain, big game in La Liga today. Sevilla taking on Barcelona. It wouldn't quite live up to its billing. In fact, it would finish goalless, and this would have significant repercussions regarding the title race. Just taking a look at what that now means. When you look at La Liga table, Barca 3 points clear at the top. Real Madrid in second with a game in hand. They're away against Real Sociedad this weekend. We'll talk about that game and the title a little later on, but let's focus first, shall we, on this goalless draw as we welcome in Gab Marcotti and Julien Laurent. Jules, how would you describe this game?
I thought Barca were poor again. I'm sorry, but we saw them against Mallorca. They won 4-0 and Messi really ran that game, but there was not much more. We saw them against Leganés. They won 2-0 this time. And again, it was very average. And again, without Messi, the whole outcome would have been very different. And then tonight, when Messi can't just make it happen, there's not much else. And yes, they had a couple of chances, and Suarez maybe at the end could have done better on that Jordi Alba cross. But apart from that, I thought it was really poor. And once again, I'm not really sure I understand what Kike Setién tried to do. Why Ansu Fati didn't come on at all? Why is Antoine Griezmann coming on so late, 77th minute in the game? Why on earth is even Rakitic still playing for that team? Why is he even starting? I mean, this goes beyond me, why Rakitic still has a place in that team when you've got Arthur on the bench. Well, even Ricky Puig had a good entrance against Leganés. And then to see Rakitic in that team, just that doesn't make any sense to me.
What was his thought process going into this game? What was his lineup trying to get out of it, Gab?
Well, I mean, I disagree a little bit with Jules. I mean, I think the end result was correct. But what he was trying to do is do what, you know, what it says on his tin, which is to try and impose the game on the opposition and bring back the passing and movement of old. And I thought, you know, in the first half, especially the first half hour, I thought Barcelona looked pretty sharp, perhaps without creating or without actually, you know, shooting on goal and finalizing what they created. But then, and I think these are some of the limits that we see with Setien, when Sevilla changed it around, Lopetegui sent on Ever Banega for, I think it was Oliver Torres at halftime, all of a sudden it was a much more even game, and they didn't have the adjustment. And, you know, Jules is right, maybe Griezmann could have changed it a little bit if he'd come on earlier. I'm assuming he felt that Ricky Puig perhaps, you know, not ready to physically against, you know, once Sevilla had tightened up and gone to, been sent on Goudet and gone to three at the back. But Setien's not somebody who's going to go and change systems. He might change, personnel, but the philosophy remains the same. And I think on this day, I think it's more about giving credit to Sevilla for the way they played in the second half. I saw improvements, but relative to the two previous wins from Barcelona, but that probably says more about the opposition and, as Jules said, about Messi.
Jules, how telling is this? You look at this run-in, away against Sevilla, you could argue the biggest test. Antoine Griezmann's on the bench for this game.
Yeah, and you could always say that he started the first two games, although he was second off in each of them, and then maybe because he hadn't played for 3 months, and, you know, apart from Messi, everybody else, there was some kind of rotation there and there. I don't know, but I can understand why he's on the bench. I can't understand why it takes you 77 minutes in a game where it's 0-0, where clearly you need a bit of spark, or at least you need to change something or try something a bit different, because it wasn't working. And then you leave him on the bench for so long. And Ansu Fati, even more if you're not keen on Griezmann, and he hasn't been very good in the first two games. But Ansu Fati had a very good game against Leganés, scored a very nice goal. And then you leave him on the bench for the whole game even. And I don't know. I'm not so sure really about Kike Setien's tactics and choices tonight.
It's a big head scratcher. As Jules mentioned, Ansu Fati, of course, excellent against Leganés, doesn't even feature today. Is Kike Setien, is he out of his depth here, Gam?
Again, I'm assuming there's some sort of issue, perhaps with his fitness, with not wanting him to play too many games or too many minutes.
But it's away against Sevilla. This is a big game.
It's an odd one.
It's a proper match. You know, this is a game that if you're going to win the title, you know, if he won it today, Barca are a big favourites, yet they've really opened the door now for Real Madrid. I know they didn't lose, but it's a goalless draw. You start Braithwaite. Ansu Fati doesn't come on. Griezmann, 13 minutes to go. It just didn't seem to make any sense. It's like Kike Setien scared to make the decisions that are happening in-game.
And he starts Martin Braithwaite. Don't forget. That's the flip side of it. And, you know, no disrespect. But those are big calls that he's making. I just think one of Setien's strengths clearly isn't adjusting. And you know, he's trying to channel the pass. And sending Gerard Pique up at the end to play center forward in the last 5 or 10 minutes. I mean, seriously? Like, you know, this is your big innovation laid on to win games. You know, if that crap worked, you would have played PK up front from the first minute, right? it's this kind of confusion that's there. Stick to what you know, believe in that system, and then carry it through. But then that's not what happens during the games. It's almost like we have this blueprint where it's for 80 minutes, we're going to knock the ball around, try to create something. And as I said, I think they did it well at the start of the first half. But then when that doesn't work, you know, let's come up with this very original idea that Pep was doing 10 years ago of putting Pique up front. It's a tough spot for him. But like I said, I think there was progress today relative to the previous two games. What that means going forward, I don't know, because, like, I'm assuming you're going to ask about what this means to the title race or whatever. I'll tell you right now what it means. We don't know. All we know is that they finish level on points, then Real Madrid takes it. But I would expect many more twists and turns. It's not as simple as looking at the league table, because I think the heat and this and then this calendar, you know, this fixture, the rhythm of the games, one after the other, I think it's really going to take its toll, and I think there will be more twists and turns.
Before we go return to the title race, Jules, I just want to bring up the point that you are very much the number one person in the world go and get rid of Valverde, and now you're questioning Setien as well. Maybe it's just the players.
There's no doubt the players have some part of responsibility in the... I mean, they're still top of the table in La Liga, and they're still qualifying in the Champions League, and they have a second leg, last 16 to play. So it's not all dramatic, but I still expect them to play better than that. And I know Quique Setién is trying to get this team to play better. I agree with Gab. I mean, they had 65% of possession today. The first half hour, I thought the passing was better. The counter press was better than we saw against Leganés and especially against Mallorca. So you could see the improvement, I think, between what Quique Setién is trying to do and what Valverde was doing, especially towards the end of his tenure. But you're right. The players, for sure, are partly to blame as well. And if you take Messi out of that team, and obviously this is a big part of the team, but I think the rest of them, there's not many that really have played at the level the whole season. And Ter Stegen, maybe probably the only one, really.
Let's talk about the title then. You take a look at the odds, and the bookies can't separate them. 11-10 on both of them. 3 points of difference. Real Madrid in action on Sunday. Don't forget that in La Liga, it's head-to-head. So if it ends level on points, Real Madrid will be crowned champions because, of course, they beat Barcelona at the Bernabeu. Jules Gabb says there's going to be lots of twists, that we shouldn't get too carried away with this. Do you agree?
Yes, I agree. I think there are a lot of games where you could go, especially in the current context, where you can go and easily drop points. Although I thought Real Madrid were impressive at Valencia, I have to say, even if the first half was quite even, the second half, I thought they were fantastic. I like what Zidane did in his formation. And I like the confidence and the momentum that they're getting at the moment, which is the complete opposite, really, to Barcelona. And Gerard Piqué came on Spanish television after the game tonight and said, if we keep playing like we did those three games, there's no way we can win this title. And I think he knows pretty well. He knows that if Real Madrid drop points, one, they won't drop many. And secondly, you are not allowed to have another of those performances like you had tonight and drop more points. Because if you keep doing that, then the title is theirs for sure. So I think it would be fascinating. I think it's a real shame we don't have another Clásico. Mm. I would have loved to see a Clásico like in a couple of weeks or something. But both have been played, and like you said, Real are ahead in those two games. But I think Barca would have to be very, very careful to make sure that they don't drop many more points, because I think that if Real do drop more points, and I think they might well do, they won't drop many.
Feel free to walk out, Gab. I know it's late. You can go to bed if you like. Last thing, who will win La Liga, Mr. Marcotti?
I don't know who's coming. I'm going to lean Real Madrid because they have the tiebreaker. But like I've said already, there will be twists and turns. The reason I'm leaning Real Madrid is that I just think they have depth and more options. And I think it's going to be a real factor, both fatigue and potential injuries between now and the end of the season. I think really apart from Casemiro and possibly Benzema, you know, if you look at midfield and attack, they simply have fewer players who are irreplaceable or really difficult to replace relative to Barcelona, where, you know, if Busquets, even with his limitations, goes out, let alone Messi, we saw how much fun it was playing without Suarez. I just think Barcelona have more issues in that one. And also, can I give a shout out to Marco Asensio, back and scores a goal?
Yes.
I have no idea what his fitness levels are like, whether he can play 90 minutes.
That was on yesterday's show, just even Gab. Looking at this attack. I just want to know who's going to win. Right, Real Madrid, overall. Lots of injuries, squad depth, good. A lot of more Gab waffling on. You can listen to the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast, which is available now over on the website.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with GEICO. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
GEICO. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
The great thing about facts, they're proven. Like the fact that crude oil contains impurities. Or that base oil made from natural gas is 99.5% free of impurities. And the fact that Pennzoil is the first synthetic motor oil made from natural gas, not crude oil. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil.
based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30.
Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Craig Burley and Frank LaBeouf with me to answer some of your tweets. Lots about today's game between United and Spurs. We just picked the one, though. Time to move David De Gea on and bring Henderson on full-time next season. Another goal that should have been stopped and cost us 2 points, Craig.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big call because he's such an experienced goalkeeper, isn't he? And he has done a great job in the main for United, but there's been a lot of mistakes recently. And when I say recently, probably the last 12 to 18 months in particular, maybe certainly the last 12 months. And it wasn't a glaring error, but it was there to be saved. And, you know, those are the big moments. A lot of talk about young Henderson. He's rated very, very highly. However, this could be a big decision at some point, maybe the summer, for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
Do you agree, Frank?
I do agree. I think there is a cycle for everybody, even for goalkeepers, and De Gea served Man United very well and for long term. But maybe it's time, especially when Craig mentioned Anderson, it's time for a new goalkeeper. And when you have somebody like Anderson just behind, you should take the chance, I think.
Craig, should England fans be worried about having Maguire as their first-choice centre-back for the Euros next year? Surely players like Mbappe and Hazard would have a field day against him.
Yeah, look, I think Harry Maguire's a good footballer, but he gets a little square and he's a little slow in terms of his mobility, which is a problem. So is Eric Dier, and we saw that tonight. And on top of that, John Stones has been having a problematic period in his career, who's obviously a terrific talent, John Stones, but he's had a lot of injuries, a lot of mistakes, hasn't played a lot of games. Those guys would have been the key players. So then you're looking at somebody like Tyrone Mings at Aston Villa. You're looking at Joe Gomez at Liverpool. And players like that. Look, I think Maguire will start for England whenever they play. But it's just who's going to partner him. I think at the moment it's probably going to be Joe Gomez. Primarily because, well, he's a good player, but primarily because he's very quick as well. But you know me, Dan, I've always said England at the moment have got so much talent going forward. But that centre-back position, which Frank knows is so important, is a big problem for Gareth Southgate at the moment.
Do you rate Harry Maguire, Frank?
Well, it's always strange when you see the amount of money that Manchester United spend for a player like that. He's been good. He's been even very good for what I know and how I rate him. But it's true that the slowness that he shows can be a real problem for England in the Euro. But seeing the question, I wonder, you know, sometimes if Mbappe or Hazard are in their best, who can cope with them? Nobody. Really. Not even the best, I don't know, center half you can take. Even Van Dijk, Ramos, I don't know, Varane can cope with those. Maguire has a talent, and he hasn't got all the talents, but he does well, and he's a very smart player in a way that he can anticipate. He knows that his biggest weakness is his slowness, but I think he managed it pretty well. So today that was obvious that we saw the weakness, but normally he can hide it pretty well.
Frank, does this match give you more belief that Chelsea is almost certain to get into the top four?
Not necessarily, because the thing is, we can't really rate the level of the players after the restart. We have to wait maybe two other days of the Premier League to know who physically is on top, who lost the most after the pandemic. So hard to say. We're going to see during the weekend Chelsea how they cope, but everybody has a delay physically talking with the restart of the Premier League. So it's boring, but it was boring in Bundesliga when it started, in Liga, in Spain, and now in the Premier League. I think we shouldn't judge too severely the players. We have to wait, like, again, two or three more days to be able to make a judgment and a statement about the Premier League.
Frank, is it correct to say Cristiano Ronaldo's greatest achievement is being compared to Messi? He's looked lost since joining Juventus.
Now, Cristiano Ronaldo is lost since he joined Juventus? How could I agree with that? I mean, I think he does well at Juventus. He scored many, many goals. He's still in a position to win the Champions League. I mean, he does what he has to do. He's getting older, so he has to change his football. He already did when he was playing for Real Madrid. But I think Cristiano Ronaldo shouldn't be criticized. He does his best. He does well. He still does very, very well. And he's still maybe the best player in the world if you like Messi or Ronaldo.
Would you like to comment, Craig, on this?
Well, it's a nonsense statement, so that's my comment.
Frank, Kaká or Ronaldinho?
Oh. Ronaldinho, because he was... at his best, he was absolutely fantastic when he played for Paris Saint-Germain. I played against him, but I saw him playing with Barcelona and with the Brazilian national team. He was absolutely fantastic. Kaká is more to serve the team he plays with. Ronaldinho is an artist, and that's why he's different. And that's why maybe I know him. It's why maybe I like him more than Kaká. But he's a fantastic player. They're two fantastic players. And
your fireworks are going off, Frank.
Yeah,
I like it.
That's a new hairstyle for you.
Final point.
Yeah, I know, but
that's all right. Yeah, oh, now you spoil the illusion. Everyone thought that was really a bookshelf behind you, Frank.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Voila, I'm back. I'm back to business.
Craig, one look at Juan Mata in normal clothes, and you'd never guess he's a top footballer. Any other players from your time who didn't really look like players outside the pitch?
I know who he's going to say.
Stevie Nicol with those sort of bleached jeans, you know that? Or Stevie Clark used to wear those kind of bleached coloured jeans, right. And one of the boys called him the plumber's mate.
Yeah.
here's the electrician's mate. I think that's a bit harsh on Juan Mata. I don't think he doesn't look like a footballer for sure. Absolutely not.
Who did you think he was going to say, Frank?
Well, I would have gone for Gianfranco Zola. I mean, that guy from his Sardinia island, and he looks like he never watched TV to know how to dress up and come to England. I mean, that was so funny. Every day, that was kind of an interesting situation, an interesting comment from everybody, especially Dennis Wise.
But what did he dress like, Frank? Describe it to us.
Well, I don't know. No sense. Like... I would say, no, because it was the 90s, so, you know, we dressed differently.
Yeah.
It was very colorful, and it didn't match, I don't know. And he had shirts with short sleeves. I don't know, it's good when you work in the office, but not when you're a football player. It doesn't go with that. So, yeah, that's why.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. That's the end of today. Lots of action, of course, over the weekend. We'll be back tomorrow for more. Until then, goodbye.